I talk to you, the light goes on. So say hello.
Hello.
So you see, talking to
Robin Mitchell.
And Robin, you actually, you said you'll be supportive here, but you're worried about a possible warrant from an old camping ticket, of all things.
Yeah, totally.
And you're a homeless person yourself?
Yeah, I am homeless. I used to work for the county. I went storm disaster relief, and then I got hooked. I don't know, Santa Cruz has been really weird. I got two daughters that are gone now. I'm estranged from them because of the people that rented us a house. I got it through the community resource center. Mike.
Almost community resource center? Mike Luskas?
Yeah, he got it all hooked up. And then there was this crazy old guy living out back. Him and my ex-wife.
Go ahead, I'm sorry. So you got a lodging through Mike Luskas and some problems?
Yeah, he got us a place. And then, like, they took the money that we gave them, and they went to the Philippines. And
they being?
The landlady. Her name is Edna Baraga. Well, anyway, they had this other little Filipino guy living out back in this little studio cottage, and he started getting my girlfriend drunk all the time and stuff, and I'd go to work, and then I'd come home, and she wouldn't come home at night and stuff, and I finally caught her, you know, whatever. Okay. And so now she lives in Modesto, and I'm homeless here, and I can't find a job. Anywhere, nobody will give me a job.
So you, as a homeless person, you find it difficult to get work?
Or? Yeah, I do, totally. I got a resume from the shelter, but I mean, it says Coral Street right on it, so I take it in and they look at it and then they know I'm homeless, and I guess they just don't want to give me work.
And how long have you been homeless?
I'm working on about 8 months now.
And what do you do at night when you need to sleep?
I got a camp, but I'm being harassed around there now. Every time I turn around, there's a ranger harassing one of my friends, asking me where it is, or asking them where the camp is, and all this crazy stuff.
This is up in the Pocono?
It's out towards Wilder Ranch.
But the rangers are tracking you down?
Yeah, they're working on it.
And so, is that because people complain about your camp, or just because the rangers have decided they want to get rid of your camp?
It has to have something to do with the rangers, because I've already talked to the neighbors, and they know I'm down there. I've been down there for like 6 months, and there's been no problems up till now. My girlfriend's little sister was walking down there, and they shook her down to find out what was going on and stuff. Got my name and all this crazy stuff, so I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, eventually they're probably going to come down and give me another camping ticket.
This is within the city limits?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the Parks and Rec Rangers, or Lebensraum's Rangers, as I call them, Jim Lang's men, have really been notorious for going after homeless people in different places, almost worse than the police at times.
Yeah, the police haven't given me no problem. As a matter of fact, I had a run-in with him because my girlfriend's underage, and he was telling me he didn't care if I was camping anywhere. The cops in this town really don't care about that so much. They don't go looking for it, you know, they're not trying to create problems for people that are having a hard time already. But I don't understand why the rangers want to come down on me. I just don't understand it. I mean, I'm homeless, for crying out loud. Where am I going to go? You know, what am I going to do? So I can tell they don't want me here, but like I said, I was working for the county. I was doing a good job, and then I got a bunch of marital problems, and everything went down the tube. And the people I moved down here with, they were really weird, too. So they were telling the landlords and stuff all this crazy stuff, so I got evicted first.
So now you're struggling.
Totally. Completely struggling.
Feel free to hang here as long as you want. Actually, if you stay awake after 11, you're not illegal. You're only illegal once you're asleep.
Right.
Strangely enough.
I'll hang out.
All right.
Totally.
Well, thank you.
Uh-huh.
David, is it?
Robin.
Robin.
Robin. Robin Mitchell.
Hey, Robin. Well, you recently had some conversations with Homeless Community Resource Center Karen Gillette.
I didn't have the conversation myself, but I heard her talking. Uh-huh. She was talking about you, Robert.
And how long ago was this?
This was about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
She was saying how you were crazy and all this stuff. I don't know. I think she's jealous because she can't, you know, represent the homeless people the way you seem to represent them. You know, she doesn't want to. She wants everything to be quiet, you know, and mellow. Doesn't want it to disturb her life. I think that's what it is, basically, because, I mean, I can tell she's not homeless, and I can tell that, you know, her life's pretty cush because she is that lady, so, you know, I mean, I don't know why she wants to get down on somebody else that's an advocate for the homeless.
No. Did she make any particular criticisms you think are worthy of speaking? Or?
Yeah, she pretty much said that you were crazy, and she didn't like your tactics, She thought you were, I guess, overbearing when it comes to trying to get your point across about the homeless people. And like I said, I'm pretty sure it's just because she doesn't want anybody to rock her boat. Because it seems to me that she's pretty set with her director of the Homeless Community Resource Center.
Yeah, Karen actually in the past used to break up demonstrations by spreading false rumors, but in the last couple of years she's been much better. In fact, we've been talking regularly. I'll call her and she'll talk to me and so forth. It's interesting. I mean, I like to hear what really goes on behind the mask.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, she's quite courteous to me and correct and returns my calls, and I'm glad that she does, but I'm always curious what's really happening. Have some free food. It's available here.
Well, I heard her talking about the campground, and she was really disenchanted by the people that were living there because, you know, she was like, well, they don't want to do anything better with their lives, and, you know.
She was criticizing the River Street refugees?
Or? Yeah, totally. She was like, you know, they're so dramatic, and they're all on drugs and all this stuff. And I saw some of that, but I didn't see a lot of people on drugs because a lot of people that were back there didn't have money, and they didn't have nowhere to go. And they're not going to get the trailers. I don't understand this trailers for trolls. I mean, what? I see rich people walking around drunk, so now they're going to give a drunk person somewhere to live and just condone that lifestyle? You know, I just don't understand it all. And why do they call it trailers, not trolls? I don't look anything like a troll. I don't. And
That's actually the phraseology I used to describe.
Was it?
I described community house that way because
really?
They are eliminating all the campground people.
Yeah.
And putting in these fancy trailers for 40 people, which is going to cost $1 million.
It was in the paper. They called it trailers, not trolls.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't think you had anything to do with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made up the phrase.
Well, it's been...
It was trailers, not trolls, meaning... They regard homeless people as trolls, and so instead they're going to put in trailers for 40 and eliminate a campground for 200.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
Well, what made these 40 people so lucky? They're all...
Oh, it's just a project to get money for people who have SSI, to get trailers for people who have SSI checks because they can afford to pay $600 a month.
Right.
And it's a way to fund a transitional housing project, which the Citizens Committee for the Homeless wants to fund. And they can get people, they can pay people to do social worker jobs and other type jobs there. It's a social service project.
Right. So basically what you're saying is there's no money in the homeless, just plain old homeless.
There's not much money in providing basic services because that doesn't really cost that much.
Well, I've been homeless since I was 13 years old. I came from a broken home, you know. I mean, everybody's like, well, just stash him on over here so we can't see him, you know. And it's just crazy because I've been through counseling and stuff. There's nothing out there for anybody like me, for instance. I have no education. Everything I know, I pretty much taught myself.
Yeah.
And I go in to get a job as a mechanic. I'm an excellent mechanic, but I'm not ASE certified, so I'm not going to get the job. Somebody that, you know, had a good life and had a good family is going to get the job. And that means, you know, I don't know, Jesus said to help the fatherless and, you know, and help the widowers and all this stuff. And I just don't see people helping anybody anymore. It's just become a rat race, and I guess that's the way everybody likes it, so... I'm pretty disenchanted with the world.
Well, you sounds like you're on the downside of it at the moment.
No, actually, yeah. I'm pretty happy usually. I try to keep my spirits up.
Well, you seem happy, but I mean, you're also, you know, you're under the cutting edge. You're getting the cuts, so.
Yeah. Well, I feel like it's kind of an oppression. And with people like Karen running the shelters and, you know, people that really are just more concerned with their own lives than... you know, the other people around them that actually need the help. Because, I mean, I'm sure a lot of those people have drug problems, but, I mean, there's ways that people can be helped with those drug problems. There's got to be something somebody can do. I mean, just sweep them under the carpet is not going to work. They're still going to be there.
Well, thank you, Robert.
You're welcome.
So it's 7:10 here at the front of City Hall. We have a larger group of people here. A lot of folks I don't know. Penny's here. Chris Brazda and Paul have showed up from... Food Not Bombs of the early 90s.
And there's a beautiful ring around the moon from where we're sitting here. It's a very beautiful view.
It's our resident astronomer whose name is...
Caleb.
Caleb, the astronomer.
I'm not an astronomer.
He just looks like an astronomer, a man who knows the stars. And, of course, it's John Stewart. Say hello, John.
Hello, John.
Very good. Nicely said.
Wow.
Yeah.
Isn't that pretty?
I mean, it's going to rain.
Yeah, typical. I know. This is a man who
so
I...
So you hear listening yourself speak again?
I'm trying hard not to.
Okay.
Say something and stop me from hearing myself.
I don't know. I just came here. Has the police been by here?
Well, they've driven by occasionally, but we have had no friendly visits from Adult Sergeant Crane or any of the other higher-ups or lower-downs or anybody else. But, we do have our second River Street refugee. Actually, she's a River Street refugee reject, Shannon. That makes Dan Hopkins and Shannon are the River Street refugees here, and Dan's going off to a River Street refugee fundraiser up at Stevenson. So Shannon. And you're listening to a tape of March 1st, the first night and the first day of the sleep out at City Hall, which is now in its 11th day and night. Lieutenant Joe Havey's best efforts to destroy signs, seize food, and terrorize the participants notwithstanding. That's what happened yesterday when Lieutenant Havey came by, found Dan Hopkins nearly alone at the vigil. There was one other person kind of off to the side, and he then threatened Dan with seizure of everybody's backpack and property unless it was all removed, which, of course, is completely illegal. He declared signs were trash, handed Dan a bag, and told him he had to start picking up those signs and throwing them away, or he would start seizing everything. And Dan was bullied into this whole nonsensical situation, which Lieutenant Havey knows full well is illegal, I would have to suggest. He's been around for a number of years. He's the darling boy of the Women's Commission for Prevention of Violence to Women. He shows his best public speaking side when you see him talking. And you see his real face, the ugly face, the other face, when he's out there on the streets dealing with poor people who are trying to peacefully bring to the attention of City Hall the needs of hundreds of homeless people whom they are dismissing and reducing to a completely illegal status after 11 o'clock at night. That's our police department. That's one of the most mellow people in our police department, Lieutenant Joe Havey. We're not talking Sticky Fingers Butchie Baker here. We're talking Lieutenant Joe Havey. So, Lieutenant Joe, time to shape up, big guy. Time to start declaring the Constitution does extend as far as Santa Cruz. Time to stop threatening people with destruction of their signs. Stop declaring them trash. Stop seizing food and property. And recognize you have a responsibility to the entire community and to the Constitution here in Santa Cruz. We have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Sorry it took so long to answer.
Oh, that was one ring. What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, well, you see, you're making ringing in my ears.
I just had a passing thought. Well, actually, it's more of a passing thought, and I wonder if anybody else had thought of it, too. Mm-hmm. There's this little thing I read once about having the God-given right, if you believe in God, endowed by their creator with the inalienable rights, blah, 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 to the pursuit of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
That was just the thought I had.
Not to mention life and liberty.
Life and liberty. Can you be happy if you don't sleep?
I would say so. That's the Santa Cruz City Council position, and they're certainly educated men and women.
Can you be happy if you don't exist?
That's, I think, a Descartesian question.
Because if you didn't exist, you'd have nothing to be happy with, right?
Mm.
But, you know, the cops take an oath when they come on a force, and it's to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States of America and the state of California. I think they really need to read that Constitution.
Well, I think the question is, there's one question you haven't posed, which is, if a city council member farts in an empty chamber, is there still a stench? And I don't know what to say, except that I smell a stench even when they're not.
I don't think that when they fart there's a stench, but I'll tell you what, their shit stinks.
Well, you know, now that we're talking fecal material, and I'm sure this is highly incorrect politically.
This is very unprofessional, by the way.
Extremely.
We had an
interesting conversation at a meeting yesterday about a possible shit-in. There is a problem. I'm serious. There's a problem with there being no restrooms at night open for anybody, much less for poor people. I guess if you've got money to go into a bar, you can do that. But, they close down all the restrooms, even though there are restrooms in the parking garages that could be kept open all night.
How about
telling them, announcing publicly that we are going to be very polite about this. We will leave all our waste matter in one pile right outside the door so it can be dumped there the next morning. Now, you say that this may alienate people, but I want to tell you that back in 1968, this tactic was used by Saul Alinsky at the Chicago airport to open up and desegregate the restrooms.
Yes, but if we did it, we would be judged on our approach. In this town, every day I hear, oh, well, it's these people's approach. You know, the mayor's sympathetic, but these people are just going about it the right way.
We might be judged. I thought they'd open up a restroom lickety-split, big
well,
guy.
I don't think that you can sit around and just judge people by their approach all the time. You know, these are a desperate situation, and the people may not approach it the way.
Well, let them judge us by our approach. Let them judge us by our approach. But I bet that they would open up a restroom the next day.
Oh, totally. Well, I got in an argument yesterday with somebody because I sing this little song about sleeping on the mayor's lawn.
Oh yeah, that's an idea.
And in the song, there's a specific line that says, "And urinate in his flower bed and drink the whole night long." Somebody got really mad at me, I guess, on the street. Said, "I don't want. I can understand you needing to sleep on the mayor's lawn, but how come you want to urinate in the flower bed and say all that stuff in the song? It's because all those acts are illegal for a homeless person. They can't drink in public, but they can't drink because they're in public. They have no place non-public to go. Can't urinate because you're in public. There's no non-public place to go. The only public restrooms close really fucking early in this town. Sometimes they close in the middle of the day to fucking mop them out or something. It takes them 2 hours to fucking open the thing again. I think it's a valid concern.
If you try to go off to the side to have a drink, you might get yourself pepper gas.
Yeah, you know, sleeping, shitting, and pissing are important things that you can't survive without.
That's right.
But they're all crimes.
So I take it you'll be the first to support my shit in with an appropriately stinky song? You better think
about
that.
I'll tell you what, if you're going to shit on the sidewalk, man, I'll get up early and I'll dose myself up on coffee so I can have one of those really nice liquidy ones.
Oh, dear. This is getting pretty darn graphic.
Yep.
I suppose that... Why don't we invite the guests to call in, anybody who wants to be on the air, by
all
phone,
right,
to 427-3772 and discuss this latest crazy idea.
All right, well, I'm going to get out of here, but let me leave you this one thing.
Yeah.
We were just watching this video about the squatters in Germany.
Squatters? Is that
squatters in Germany, they took over a whole neighborhood.
They're not doing a shit in over in Germany.
They had to fight off Nazis
and
civilian fascists. And when the police came, they held the police off for 3 days. An entire neighborhood rioted for 3 days. And they did some incredible stuff. They tore up the streets so the tanks couldn't roll down. It was really incredible. But one of the things that somebody translated to me on one of the banners I thought was really interesting. It was, we shit on our fatherland. And I think we can do that here in America.
Well?
I shit on my fatherland.
I like the dead air better.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Burn down the mall. Good day.
Thank you very much.
Well, that was our radical 7 minutes on the air. Radical only in the sense that we are, of course, challenging some of the taboos. I think that... the proposal, for example, for a shit-in, though it sounds beyond the pale and has a peculiar odor to it, nonetheless makes a lot of sense in that it does deal with a real issue, lack of restroom facilities, that people insist on ignoring those in authority. Just like they ignore the right to sleep, they ignore all the other functions that people who are poor, who have to live outside, also have to do. And it's just, you know, it should be given serious attention. You should also give serious attention, however, to the upcoming sleepout, and that's a much more conventional, mainline, traditional kind of protest. There's, supposed to be there's a whole schedule. You'll be seeing flyers going up all over town. 1 o'clock on Saturday, there's going to be March 16th. Everyone's going to gather at Cathcart and Pacific. That's Hippie Corner, you know, the cage right across from Cat and Canary, and there'll be a meal. And there'll be a speak out, and then there'll be a march to a lie down, a lie out, a lie in, where we attempt to combat the lies of the politicians, the lies of the bureaucrats, with sort of lying down during the day, because it's legal to lie to sleep during the day, though actually it's not really legal to lie down downtown, thanks to Mayor Rotkin and our old pal Scott Kennedy. What do you call him? Close him down, Kennedy from the campground, hero of the campground, Scott Kennedy, the man who closed the homeless campground, along with Mike Rotkin. He also helped pass the anti-homeless laws back in 1994 that makes it illegal to lie down on the mall, whether you're blocking traffic or not. And that, of course, was part of the merchants' grand plan to forestall any demonstrations downtown against this law that they seem to have so much invested in, the sleeping ban. At least they certainly haven't had any kind of serious protest or made any real attempts to make a change in that law in spite of years of protest against it by many different sectors in the community, but particularly the people whom it most affects, homeless people. Anyway, there'll be a lie down at 3 o'clock on March 16th or thereabouts, and after that, people go to City Hall and join the sleep out, which will then, we believe, be in day 16 of its ongoing tenure, though they do need your help now. As I've said earlier in the show, they have few people there during the day, and the police take advantage of that to come in and essentially terrorize them, and then remove their First Amendment rights bodily, or get them to remove their First Amendment rights by threat and innuendo. And they need people there to keep an eye on what's going on and to deter that kind of police misconduct. And this morning I understand that a couple of the victims are going to go down to the Citizens Police Review Board, which, by the way, meets today at 5 o'clock. You can go into the Citizens Police Review Board office and file a complaint any morning, 9 to 1, Monday through Thursday at, I believe it's 916 Cedar Street. It's, let me take a look here. It's 915 Cedar Street, and the phone number at the Police Review Board is 429-3262, 429-3262. Dan Hopkins has told me he's going to be filing a complaint this morning, and I believe Sean is going to do the same against Lieutenant Habey, and Habey's repeated misconduct concerning political science. There have been the reports about Habey's violence toward a homeless couple last week has been thrown into some doubt because we don't have direct testimony or perception on that, and we also have a recent perception that the couple was fighting with themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that they weren't telling the truth, but it's looking more like it's an uncertain kind of situation. The firemen that the couple say witnessed at least the incidents before the beating are either not available, not willing to talk, or inappropriately identified. So we're holding Habey responsible. I'm holding Habey responsible for his behavior toward the vigil. I will suspend judgment on his actions at the beating situation, the alleged beating of a couple across from the homeless vigil. I guess it was about a week ago. They did give their testimony on videotape, and they have given it on audio tape as well. But they are alcoholics, and although this does not necessarily disqualify them, of course, alcoholics get beaten up too, and frequently more often than the rest of us. But anyway, Lieutenant Habey is getting several complaints filed against him by Dan and by Sean, I believe, this morning, if they can ever tear themselves away from their adoring media. And again, a tip of the hat to Becky Johnson and Charlie Phillips, who have been, not to mention Patrick Lancelin, who have been videoing and interviewing and taping like mad and coming down at all hours to the vigil. But frankly, the vigil does not have enough support. The vigil is really very, very thin, particularly at night and also during the day, as I said. And it needs you to look in on it, check in on it. That's at City Hall, 809 Center Street. It won't continue. It won't succeed unless you support it. These people can't do it on their own. They're exhausted. They're tired. They're under constant police pressure. And they need your support. And you can also, you can give the vigil a call. You can actually contact the vigil at the City Hall payphone, which I did post here somewhere. Let's see if that, yeah, it's still here. It's 425-9679. 425-9679 is the payphone. You give them a call, they can actually pick it up and talk to you. And you can ask them if they need coffee, if they need, sexual satisfaction. No, I'll just, I don't know. Am I kidding about that? I don't know. That's getting a little radical. If they need company, if they need more signs to replace the signs the police have destroyed, which they do now, by the way, or they did anyway from 3 to 5 this morning when I was down there. And again, I remind you, the city council meeting is tomorrow night. Not that city council means a damn, but in the midst of this sleep out, it may mean more because, you know, the city council is having its last meeting before March 15th when the Winter Armory closes, and they are in essence saying by their silence at that meeting, by their refusal to take action to declare a moratorium on the sleeping ban or open up an emergency campground, We don't give a damn. Now, they'll tell you, oh, we've looked through all these sites, and they'll wring their hands, and Catherine Byers will look at you with a piteous look, and Celia Scott will tell you she's walked here and walked there and looked over all these sites. But they have done nothing as far as any formal resolutions to deal with the situation, and they could have. They haven't even attempted a formal resolution in the last 6 months, other than opening a bay in the armory for storing goods and moving the free meal indoors, which I guess has turned out to be a pretty good idea, according to a lot of people. I thought it was going to be sort of an institutional situation, and indeed, I guess some people have said that, but most of the people I've talked to like the free meal being indoors rather than under the old lean-to structure. But the reason it had to move indoors was not for the comfort of the people. It was because the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has, again, these grandiose community house trailer project plans, which are still unfunded, by the way. I've heard of no new developments in that line. And in fact, the rumor goes, they put out the word in the Sentinel for an administrator. They're looking for somebody to run community house. So I would suggest you folks check the Sunday Sentinel want ad section. And those of you who want to volunteer to get a nice plush job as the community house director, call in. In fact, I'm going to suggest that homeless people call in for that job, and we'll see just how non-discriminatory the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is. Of course, we already know how non-discriminatory they have. I mean, they are. And that kind of that leads us into the next phase of my master plan and this show, which is a tape which I began to put together this morning somewhat late, about the December 28th meeting of the Board of Directors of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. Now, that's a board that meets once a month, supposedly to oversee, investigate, discuss, and showcase for the public, if necessary. They used to be open to the public. What goes on with the emergency shelter provider in Santa Cruz County? That's the Citizens Committee. You want emergency shelter? They're the people. You get kicked out of their program like Gina did in October, you are out of luck. Shit out of luck. Because if you have to, you can't appeal it. They have no appeal process. At least they hadn't as of a week ago. And we've asked them month after month to consider this woman's appeal, and Paul Marceau has nothing to say on that subject. He smiles and speaks smoothly, and he's a friendly, amiable guy, but I don't know. How friendly and amiable is it to leave someone out of all shelter for 4 months without any kind of due process or appeal? Not terribly amiable. Or maybe it's amiable. We might have said the same thing about certain German officials during the Second World War, or maybe even some U.S. officials during the Vietnam War, or maybe some, well, you get the general gist of what I'm saying. So, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless has their board of directors meeting on the fourth Thursday of every month at 4 o'clock in the afternoon at Garfield Park Church. Mark that on your calendar, because even though they've threatened to arrest me, you can probably still get into their meeting. Not that it'll do you too much good, but I would suggest you try to get in, and try to get in with your video camera, which, of course, they will now try to confiscate or instruct you that you cannot video. That you cannot video a public meeting. Get that. Which, of course, is nonsense. You can, and you should, but they have been trying to intimidate people from doing it. Why? Because on December 28th, at the meeting you're about to hear a partial tape of, there were two people videoing. And that video recorded the actual events that went on, the actual discussion that happened, and the things that were not discussed. And, of course, I've reported repeatedly on the air that the meeting concluded when I attempted to bring to their attention during their proper segment of their meeting, which is their oral communication section, which they deliberately postponed till the last 15 minutes of the meeting, so we all had to sit there and wait and wait and wait. They wanted to shut us up and last us out and make us sit on our butts and go home and realize that they didn't want to hear us. But I sat there, and I waited, and I waited, and I waited, and I deferred to other people again and again. And finally, at the end of the meeting, I attempted to play this small segment of tape, which, of course, has become rather famous. It's a promise by their two paid employees, Daryl Darling, who runs the Community House Project, and Paul Marceau, who runs the Interfaith Satellite Program, a promise made to the campers of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, the only legal place for people to sleep in Santa Cruz until it was closed down. Promise made in November that it would be kept open, essentially, as it turned out, until early March, because they said they would not close it down until 10 days after community house permits were granted or January 1st, 10 days after January 1st, if that were earlier, unless there was something requiring renegotiation. And since they never renegotiated, we must assume there was nothing requiring renegotiation. In fact, they used the pretext of the first storm in December to close it down. Anyway, at that meeting, I had a tape recording of that promise. And it was pretty short. And it takes 45 seconds to play. It was Daryl and Paul repeatedly saying, we will do this, we will do this. We will not close it down until 10 days after permits are granted for Community House. I announced I was going to play that tape. Paul Lee gabbled me into silence, said, you will not play that tape, we're going to close the meeting. He closed the meeting, and I played the tape as the people filed out, and I spoke in a rather loud voice, accusing Daryl Darling of essentially making the homeless homeless. And that was all recorded by video cameras, and it was all recorded by audio cameras. And they claimed the next meeting that I had disrupted that meeting and threatened to have me arrested, called the cops twice, and eventually locked me out of the room, all on what they claimed was the grounds of some disruption. But I didn't disrupt their meeting. They disrupted their meeting. They disrupted their own process. They, like the monkeys in the example that we'll see here and speak nothing, did not want to see, hear, or discuss the rights of their charges, of the homeless people who they are collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars, fundraised millions over the years for. It's a sad situation. And for the first time, thanks to Charlie Phillips, who edited and took one of these video tapes that was going on at that meeting, I have the audio track, and it's a pretty long track, so I'm not going to play it all. I'm going to play some of it, and I've edited it with my own comments. I have not gotten through the whole thing, so you're not going to be able to hear the whole thing. But you will be able to hear some of it. And if you get bored with it, or you want to comment on it, or you've got something else you want to say, since the show is due to end in about 45 minutes, give a call to 427-3772, because you are listening to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is indeed Bathrobes Pier Robert Norse, and you are tuned to a show concerning itself with civil rights for the poor. You're about to hear some selections from the last open meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, the board of directors of that body, which it controls all emergency shelter services pretty much in Santa Cruz County, which after this meeting had me excluded, and also excluded the media, excluded tape recordings, excluded video recordings. But at this meeting there were two people videoing and there were several people taping. And there was a number of people as visitors who were watching the proceedings, including people from the River Street Refugees who asked some searching questions. It's interesting to see the kinds of answers they got. It was also quite a stimulating beginning of a dialogue. It was the kind of thing that should have, in my mind, taken place last summer, months before the Community House replacement for the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was decided on, months before this whole controversy became necessary, because Citizens Committee adopted an insulated, our priorities are our priorities, to hell with the homeless kind of platform and determination. To hear is that of Xavier, a community member, a worker with Food Not Bombs, and also a video photographer who had a question.
You were talking about funding earlier, and you're talking about funding now. A concern that I have is that I see that a lot of grassroots groups that are comprised of people who are the subject of what's going on, oftentimes, example would be Food Not Bombs, tend to, on a very low shoestring budget, get a lot done. And I'm not saying that the big meetings are bad, but I just to see this kind of tendency that once things get really big, that they sink a lot of money away from the actual issue. And I'm wondering if that could be addressed at all.
Well, not today. I know what you mean. We understand that.
He's
got to go.
I think this is not an issue specifically for circuit. This is an introduction of a potential consultant that we have.
Not that
it's an insignificant question.
I want to know how much additional.
So the individual who dismissed the question was Daryl Darling. He dismissed it, of course, by saying it was not an insignificant question, but not apparently significant enough to discuss. You see, the same process of dismissing significant questions coming from the public in this lengthy speech of Paul Meursault's, he raises the issues that should have been raised many months before, very important issues like homeless representation, the fate of the homeless campground, how much the board wants to be involved in that. Again, not going into the specifics of the controversy around the closing of the campground. And just when it seems that that might even be discussed, they decide to throw it into a brainstorming session, an essentially arbitrary offhand decision made by board chairman Paul Lee, who was chairing the meeting. Here's Paul Meursault speaking of the issues, and then... The significance of throwing it into a brainstorming session is the brainstorming sessions, as I later note, are closed to the public, and they'll happen a month down the line. So the issue that Xavier raised, which was dismissed by first by Chair Paul Lee, you can't really hear that very well, but he says, no, we haven't got time for that. And then Daryl Darling, who's the head of the Community House Project, who says, that's not an insignificant question, but we're going to treat it as though it is. You'll see the same process happening at other issues raised by the public until, of course, one of the board members raises them. But here's a phone call first.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Well, I'm not intending to be on the air, but I'll just ask. This is Dave Jade. I was hoping to get Phil Free's phone number.
You know, I don't have Phil Free's phone number, but he's probably listening to the show. Maybe he'll call in with it, or maybe he can call
sure.
you.
Sure, yeah, if he could, yeah. My number is 429-5284. I need someone to fill in for my show tonight.
Okay.
I'm going to Castorville for a meeting.
All right, well, let's hope he calls in and...
Yeah.
429-5284?
Right.
All right.
Yeah, no strange phone calls, just feel free.
All right. Women, just hold up, will you? All right. Thank you.
Okay.
And now we're going to continue with the tape of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's December 28th Board of Directors meeting.
Over and meet Uncle Bob here.
Hello. Hi.
If we can get the right tape going, that is.
Speaking very eloquently, and then you can see how they get completely buried.
Because in many instances, we work well in colleagueship with city or county in performing homeless services, and they do the funding for them. And at other times, it's going to be that we're going to have to stand and say, you know, if there's a gap here, something needs provision, or this isn't being done right, and we have to be critical partners vis-a-vis those public agencies. And when are we which, and how do we decide? Is a question. There's a whole series of questions that have come up in terms of agency process. For example, what's the board involvement? A lot of significant things happened since last November 30th when the board met, and today, the last 4 weeks. At what level is the board to be involved? On what issues and actions does the board want to be informed? On what issues and actions does the board want to be consulted? On what issues and actions does the board need to give their consent? And those aren't clear. I mean, some things aren't clear. Boards have to approve budgets, and boards have to approve consultants and that sort of thing. But in terms of a major issue like the closing of the campground, at what level does the board want to be involved, and at what level is it appropriate for the board to be involved? The same question arises with homeless participation, both in terms of the issues, the actions of the board, and the decisions which are made. And how to go about that. I don't think it's a matter of whether, it's a matter of how. I don't think anybody on the board would argue that the homeless community should not be involved in our programs and in things at a different level as well. But then it gets real slippery in the practical. Who's to be involved? And at what level? Or is it by representation? And so if you have a campground full of 150 people, and somebody says, we got five people representing the homeless, well, who chose them and who do they represent? And do they speak for everybody? And what about those they don't speak for? or do you involve everybody?
And to remind our listeners, this is Paul Merceau, who is the head of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, man who lied and broke his promise to the campers by closing the campground in violation of contract, and the man responsible for, specifically, the negotiating agent for CCH, between CCH and the campers. And he is discussing, at the December 28th meeting, in a roundabout way, what happened and what issues are involved with the closing of the campground, though he isn't really discussing that. He's sort of lighting on it very lightly, like a fly lights and then alights.
All the general meeting in 25 come, but 175 don't. So how do the other 175 get represented who aren't at the meeting of the 25? And what is being sought from the homeless community? Is it advice?
His rather specious claims about the small meeting of activists that he made his promise to, which was 25 or 30 people from Save Our Shelter, that was the group of people he promised not to close the campground to. He and Daryl Darling, after extended negotiations, which were called together by Barbara Riverwoman and attended by City Council members Byers, Scott, and to some extent Kennedy, including myself, Daryl Darling, and others. Well, the answer is obvious. If he had wanted to do any outreach and found out what people wanted to do, he would have found, as reporter Becky Johnson, who's also on the board of the Citizens Committee, found that when the armory was open, very few people wanted to go in the armory. They wanted to stay in the campground. It's actually cheaper than running people up to the armory. I mean, it's incredible. Here you hear more of this double talk. I call it double talk, because he's actually trying to talk to two different audiences, the campers and the media who are listening, and then the CCH board members who already have made the decision in the inner circle, and then the majority of the board that could have overruled the board, presumably, if they knew what was going on, but are led by the nose by Director Paul Lee and a few of the other senior members like Merceau, Darling, and a few others.
Tell us what the experience is for you and what you really need. Is it consent? Are we saying, okay, you know, we can't do this unless you agree to do it. What can we agree to do together? Kind of a consensus mode. We went through all those experiences in these past month, and those are some of the issues that we've raised. The final one is media representation. We've never had such a upfront, front burner kind of issue, at least in my 2+ years. And there are a lot of media. That's the nature of the business. You know, when you're in public service and your work is in public, the public is interested in certain issues. And that means the media.
But it doesn't mean the media, because they barred the media from tape recording or doing video at subsequent meetings, because board members said it would make them, quote, uncomfortable. So what he's saying is disingenuous, insincere, and actually an attempt to divert attention, because you don't want to say that you're not going to let in the media, of course. But that was the effect of this policy. They began by barring me. They ended by barring all the media. They wouldn't say they're barring the media. They simply ask a tape record, as Patrick Lancelin did for a very brief period of time at their last meeting, and he was refused.
At one point, after about a week or 10 days of kind of media barrage, I needed to devise some guidelines for media, simply to have some sort of order in the chaos, because homeless people have a right to privacy, they have a right to confidentiality. We have certain requirements of confidentiality. We cannot release information on people, give their names, give their status.
That's another contemptible claim. It's not the confidentiality of the homeless people that Merceau is concerned about. It was the exposure of abusive conditions of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter exposure of thuggery by his staff, exposure of inadequate toilet facilities at the Coral Open Air Shelter, and then finally, later, exposure of the undemocratic, elitist process, which completely ignored homeless input and most community input, and even just plain old rational input on what makes more sense. Trailers for 20 to 40 at a cost of $1.3 million, or a campground for $200 to $300 at a cost of maybe, at the most, $100,000 to $150,000. These whole issues are being kept under wraps because Paul Lee and his inner coterie of friends had made the decisions as to what they wanted to do. It has nothing to do with protecting the rights of the homeless. And it's disgusting and contemptible that he makes that claim. But, of course, quite understandable.
And yet the media was having free access to the property and walking around and talking to anybody they wanted to. Having people access the homeless population is not a concern. They can talk to anybody they want to. My concern is whether the homeless population wants themselves accessed or identified, and a lot don't, and we have to respect the rights to the privacy of other people in the population who choose not to be forefront of the public. I don't know how to address those issues. I know how to raise them because they were raised by all the events of the past month.
Actually, he does know how to address those issues, because he did exactly what he wanted to do. He shut out the media from the campground for a while, and he had clear decisions as to what he wanted to do at the board of directors meeting as well. Again, this, I don't know what to do, I'm coming to the board for assistance, is nonsense. He did not call the board and attempt to poll them as to whether to close the campground. Had he done so in December and explained that he'd made a commitment to the campers not to do it, they would at least have had an emergency meeting on the subject, and no such meeting ever happened. So again, this innocent, wide-eyed, aw-shucks position is so much subterfuge.
Whether the board wants to look at them in terms of mission, I think it's a good follow-up to mission about who we are and what we're about and how we go about things. Anyway, I've written them down and summarized them, and I'll pass them around, as well as the guidelines for media that I have. So, I would like to at least give the board members first an opportunity